Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
The Wednesday, November 18th edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. The road to week 11 is starting right now. I'm Joe Bartle filling in for Jeff Erickson. And today I'm joined by my buddy Jim Coventry. We're going to go over a bit of news on the day, but mainly the focus of the show is going to be how to improve your team for the stretch run, who to target for trades, waivers, everything else like that. We're going to get you all covered in the road to the fantasy playoffs. Before we do that, though, I want to get a word from our sponsors, PropSwap. Smart sports bettors always know where to find the best odds before placing a bet, and that's why smart bettors use PropSwap. You can always find the best odds on PropSwap because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. See a ticket you like but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for your price you think is fair and then buy it. PropSwap sellers are always willing to negotiate, and we all know bookies never will. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $500 in bonus cash. Just use the promo code ROTO500. That's promo code ROTO500, and PropSwap will match your first deposit up to $500. Become a smarter sports bettor today. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. All right. Like I said, Wednesday, November 18th edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. Joe Bartle filling in for Jeff Erickson today. I'll be on SiriusXM tomorrow with Chris Liss. But Jim, I'm excited to talk with you. It's been a little bit since we've been able to have some airtime together.
Yeah, it's always too long. Even if it's 3 weeks, it's too long. I always enjoy working with you, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot to cover for today. There's a bit of, I don't want to say breaking news necessarily. I mean, we're recording this around 1 o'clock Central Time, so we're still getting a lot of the practice reports coming in. A lot of the information could change from Wednesday to Friday, but I think we have a bit of an idea of what to expect for some of these key players moving forward. I think starting first, we have to kind of lead with Christian McCaffrey. He's already been ruled out for this week's matchup. It means Mike Davis is good to go as the starter once more. And as we've talked about for what, 4 or 5 years now, the Detroit Lions, who do the Panthers face this week? I thought they were facing the Lions.
That sounds right. That okay. Should be correct.
All yes. Right, good. I'm going crazy already. Yeah, the Detroit Lions, who have been horrible, perennially bad at stopping opposing running backs out of the backfield, especially when they're catching the ball. I mean, this sets up great for Mike Davis to have maybe a bit of a resurgence. I know most people who are holding on to Christian McCaffrey are definitely frustrated, and if you didn't get Mike Davis, it's probably been a tough year for you figuring out what to do at your number one overall spot with Christian McCaffrey. But if you do have Mike Davis, this feels like one of his better matchups we're going to see all week. Am I crazy to assume something like that could occur?
On the surface, you're absolutely correct. This is absolutely a great matchup. However, before Mike Davis injured his wrist in the third quarter of the game, and he did return to the game, he was being spelled far more than usual, which really surprised me. He saw 52% of the snaps in that game. He had been seeing upwards of 85 in some of the games that he took over from McCaffrey. But like I said, it wasn't just the injury. He was definitely being spelled out. And so that makes me nervous. Another thing I have always said about Mike Davis is he is good in small doses. That good player, but once he gets a few games under the belt, his production dries up rapidly. And we were just starting to see that before Christian McCaffrey briefly came back to the lineup. All of a sudden, those massive receptions weren't there. It just became, and his rushing yards were for the most part going down. So yes, you're going to start him, but don't expect that 20-25-point game as he had been chipping in some of the earlier games that he took over.
Well, okay, so who spells Mike Davis then in the event? Obviously, again, McCaffrey is going to be out. I've really liked how the Panthers have used Curtis Samuel. And to me, all the talk when we were discussing what to do with Mike Davis when Christian McCaffrey returns, it was actually kind of like, well, wait, what is Curtis Samuel? How does he factor into the offense now that McCaffrey's gone? Because I thought a lot of the McCaffrey production was more or less being used to supplement Curtis Samuel, which was good. And the offense looked pretty darn explosive in weeks 7 through 9. And then we had McCaffrey back and Samuel was still doing stuff. So is this going to be Curtis Samuel that's spelling Mike Davis, or is this going to be Rodney Smith or somebody else?
Rodney Smith saw 19% of the snaps in that game. Trenton Cannon saw 10% of the snaps. It was not good because I was watching the game, and I was watching 8 games at a time. Actually, there were only 6. There was like limited early game action, but I kept seeing these different numbers in the backfield, and I'm like, I know who Trenton Cannon is, but I wasn't even aware he was on the team. And so, yes, it was a mishmash. And then we had, of course, Curtis Samuel back there. So it was a huge hit to the workload for Davis. So right now I see him as a slightly better than half timeshare player, and Samuel will be heavily involved.
Yeah, I think I disagree. And maybe if you're not facing the Lions, who by our rankings are the worst team against opposing running backs, or like for fantasy production, they allow about 5.6 receptions mm-hmm. to the running back position this year, which is fine. That's about middle of the pack. But actually, they allow the most receiving yards to running backs and the most receiving touchdowns to running backs. So again, reinforcing the point, Lions defense is not good at stopping pass-catching running backs. And I think that's where Mike Davis can still fit in. Now, if you're telling me Mike Davis is going to lose some of those pass-catching opportunities to Trenton Cannon, which is probably the biggest specialty he can have, that's a bit of an eye-opener for me. But I think more of Rodney Smith as the guy that just grounds and pounds in between the tackles like he did to Minnesota. And I think Mike Davis can do everything. But if Curtis Samuel's also doing that and Trenton Cannon is, maybe you're right. Maybe Mike Davis isn't going to be as obvious of a fantasy starter this week, whether it be for DFS or in your fantasy lineups, than I might be anticipating.
This is an important point, so I just want to add one more thing. This is going to be a little boring, but here's the targets that Mike Davis has seen. And one of those led to McCaffrey, but 8, 9, 6, and 10. Very good. Then 3, 5, 2, 6, and 5. So those 8, 9, 10 target games, those are gone. That is not what he's been for the last 5 weeks. And one of those games, I know McCaffrey was there, so I understand that was the 2 target game. So I get that. Or no, he had 5 targets in the game McCaffrey played. Anyway, but he is not the part of the offense he was. I honestly believe the coaching staff saw what I've always seen. This is 4th or 5th team he's been on. That, again, when he first comes out, I remember his San Francisco days, looked great. And then all of a sudden, he's like nothing anymore. He's a below average NFL running back, and he did hurt his wrist last week. I don't know how that's going to come out this week. He came back in the game, but that could be problematic as a receiver if his wrist is at all compromised.
Well, and it's interesting. You mentioned the targets again in week 6. He had 3, week 7, 5. week 8-2. That was against the Bears, Saints, and Falcons, respectively. And we know the Bears and Saints have good defenses. The Falcons actually are really good against opposing running backs. It's probably because you can pass so darn easily on them. And then 6 against the Chiefs, 5 against the Buccaneers. Again, that's right around the resurgence, or really rise, I should say, of Curtis Samuel. So that's where I kind of wonder if Curtis Samuel is cutting into some of that target workload, and if we'll see that against the Lions. I think Samuel actually makes a lot of sense if you are doing a cheaper DFS play. And I'll let Laird and Jenstead do that on Fridays. They do an amazing job doing the DFS stuff anyway. I'm just a simpleton compared to them. But I do think Samuel can do that stuff. I don't think the Lions defense is that good. I don't think the Lions are period very good. But this is a situation where Mike Davis can take advantage of it. The one concern that we need to discuss when it comes to Mike Davis is how the quarterback position is going to look out. And I didn't even put this in the spreadsheet necessarily when we were preparing for the podcast. But if Teddy Bridgewater is out, you're talking about XFL star PJ Walker as your starting quarterback for the Panthers. And I don't know. I actually think Walker might not be too bad. And he knows the college scheme that the Panthers are running, which helps. Mm-hmm. But that's still a downgrade from Bridgewater to Walker, I imagine.
Yeah, it has to be. Now, the one beautiful thing is, and I think you intimated this, he knows that offense, and it's really getting the ball out quickly most of the time, and he does have really good weapons who can get open quickly, and it's not as if Detroit's secondary is going to slow anybody down. So this could be a game if Walker has to play, which right now they're hopeful Teddy will play, but if he gets the ball out quickly, the run after the catch can really make his numbers look well better than he performs as an actual quarterback.
Yeah, you haven't talked me out of Mike Davis. I think I'm still in on him. I think I'm still in on Curtis Samuel, too. In fact, I might talk myself more into Curtis Samuel, which could be a problem. Let's talk about the flip side of that matchup, though. From the Lions' perspective, you've had a lot of different injuries. Matthew Stafford's a little bit banged up right now, too. It seems like he's going to be playing through like a Brett Favre torn finger injury. Great. Good for Stafford, representing the NFC North and the toughness quarterbacks. That's fantastic. But at least for a benefit for Stafford, Kenny Golladay returned to practice Wednesday. I mean, we've seen it with Michael Thomas in particular this season, right? Guys that are major stars come back to practice but still don't play. I still think it's a good sign for Kenny Galladay's status, and it's even better when the fact that Danny Amendola and Marvin Jones did not practice Wednesday. So let's just go some hypothetical scenarios, and maybe fantasy managers can manage that with us. It's okay. If Galladay is to play, and let's just assume he's going to on Sunday, do you feel confident putting him into your starting lineup despite missing the past couple of games?
I do, because Kenny Golladay doesn't need a ton of targets to come through. If he is, especially if he gets a full practice by Friday, that would be optimal. But it only would take one deep pass for him to outscore most other options you would insert into your fantasy lineup in place of him. And because of that big play ability, that's why I would feel comfortable. And one thing, this is nothing about what you said. The fantasy community in general, we haven't heard a lot of information that it hasn't been frequently said that Stafford's injury is to his non-throwing hand. And this is nothing about what you said, but people keep saying thumb. It was his left hand. It's taking a snap. That's the bigger problem. And I just wanted the fantasy managers to hear that in case they don't hear it anywhere else, to understand this does not impact his throwing at all.
That's a really good point. I guess I didn't even realize that. If you are a starting quarterback in the NFL, you don't even need like any of your fingers on your left hand. You just got to palm the ball with your right hand on the snap, and it's fine. You're good to go. If your whole left hand is gone, you can still be effective, right?
I like it.
Okay, so Golladay, you're feeling comfortable with. Stafford, we're assuming he's going to be fine. And like, well, in terms of limitation for Stafford, you're thinking it's pretty minimal, right? I mean, like, he still has a pretty banged up thumb on his left hand, but it's his left hand.
Yeah, he'll get a pain-killing injection for that, and you know, the snap is going to be a problem, but I assume the center will be smart enough to not jam the ball as hard as usual, and Stafford will manipulate his hand position to make sure the ball hits him in the right hand more than the left hand. It'll be something they work on in practice this week for sure.
Okay. All right. So Golladay, you're feeling fine about starting if he's available. Let's go on the flip side of things. So again, Danny Amendola, Marvin Jones were not at practice Wednesday. I don't know how many fantasy managers are really using Danny Amendola in even like deeper settings, but Marvin Jones, especially when Kenny Golladay was out, was a pretty relevant starter for a lot of different people. Let's say that Marvin Jones is able to play Sunday. Now Kenny Golladay is back. Do you feel confident putting Marvin Jones in your lineup, even though he missed Wednesday's practice?
You know, it's interesting that the Panthers have actually been a pretty good defense. When they play a great team, they struggle. But when they play offenses that are not dominant, they've done pretty darn well. They're the 13th best, they have the 13th fewest fantasy points to wide receivers, which is actually a pretty phenomenal number for all the youth they have on their secondary. But I think that we've seen a lot of up and down from Marvin Jones' performances, but really he has had one or two upside games, and they haven't been like those games in the past where he drops 150 and three touchdowns on you. So matter of fact, at this point, I don't see a game higher than 71 yards on the season. So no, it's snaps. I'm sorry. Oops. He had 96 last week. I'm looking on the wrong column. So yeah, he had 96 in a touchdown. He scored in three straight games. But other than that, he had a 5-catch game, and then last week was 8. And other than that, he hasn't had a big total of receptions. So I think that I'm a little nervous, but if he's a wide receiver 3, he's getting full-time play. He's getting some targets. So as a wide receiver 3, why not?
Yeah, I think I'm fine with it too. And of course, Galladay coming back likely hampers. You talked about Galladay's big play potential, and he does. That's going to probably cut into Marvin Jones's opportunities to score in the red zone. Three straight touchdowns is a byproduct of Galladay being gone. There's just one less weapon to be able to make a big play happen. And other than DeAndre Swift, that offense really doesn't have a lot of big play guys when Galladay is out. So it's interesting. Like I think there's still a floor for Marvin Jones to be an effective wide receiver 3, like you mentioned, but there's certainly less interest for me in like 10-team leagues or 12-team leagues where we have pretty shallow benches. Like, you can find somebody else, Jalen Reagor, Michael Pittman, who we talked about yesterday's show, as free agent pickups were widely available on Yahoo leagues as of yesterday. I like both those guys in their matchups this week as opposed to starting Marvin Jones so long as Galladay is healthy. Sticking with the Lions theme, though, TJ Hockenson is a guy that I've liked quite a bit, and you talk about the tight end position. Other than what, Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, you're kind of just rolling the dice every single week, and it's frustrating if you have Mark Andrews on your roster because he's kind of just fit into that category as well as tight ends. You throw your hands up and hope they get you 10 points at most. Hockenson's been a touchdown machine, but less so, surprisingly at least to me, when Galladay was out. Now, he gets the Panthers defense again this week. They're a little bit worse stopping tight ends than they are wide receivers, but they're not bad egregiously by any means. Do you feel more comfortable with Hockenson's workload now back with Galladay able to play, or are you kind of thinking you're just rolling the dice like with every other tight end right now?
You know, last week was really the first game that Hockenson busted all season. Even in his two low yardage games, he had two games below 39 yards. He had a 9 and a 17, but he scored in both of those games. So he's come through for fantasy every game to some capacity. But last week it was 2 catches for 13 yards, and he came up on last week's injury report on Thursday with a toe injury, and he was spelled more than usual. I saw Jesse James on the field more than I'm used to seeing him, and that was interesting to me. So he only played 39. Hockenson played 39 snaps in that game. It was a season low for him. And if this toe injury continues to be an issue, they may continue put Jesse James in a little more, and that always worries me with a tight end because they need targets to be successful.
Yeah, and Isaac Nyatu, the practice squad call up for them, I think is now actually on their active roster. They did the bring him up, send him back down, bring him back up, send him back down for 2 weeks. Now he's on the active roster. He also had 22% of the snaps for the tight end position as well for the Lions. It's interesting. It's definitely a frustrating endeavor. But like, if you're rostering tight ends just in general this season, it's a really hard thing to pick and choose who can go off. Like, I would love, as somebody who has Hunter Henry in a few leagues, for Hunter Henry to have like half as many red zone targets as TJ Hockenson has right now. It's just insane how the lack of tight end has really occurred. And I thought that was like one of the biggest things entering the year. I was like, no, you don't need to go get a George Kittle or Travis Kelce or any of those guys up high, because there's so many people in that 7 to 12 range that can break out. Nobody's broken out. I mean, everybody stinks every single week. You are just rolling the dice.
Yes, it's a landmine field. It's absolutely horrible. And you know what's funny, Joe? Every year we fall into the same trap. We always say, oh, wow, tight end looks deep this year. And we're always duped by it. And what keeps it going, though, is a few years back, I had Kittle. You know, I drafted him in the 9th or 10th round in every league. Somebody drafted Mark Andrews late last year. So every once in a while, it gets unearthed and somebody gets the player that blows up. The Darren Waller last year had Waller in a few leagues. And just the hope that those few guys hit keeps this going. But it's fool's gold. It's like rare that these late tight ends hit, and this year has been the worst case of it.
Yeah, there really isn't many later round tight ends that have kind of popped off, like you talked about with Kittle or Andrews or Darren Waller from like the past three consecutive years. And I've never been one to say the tight end position is super deep. I've always been, all right, if I'm going to have a tight end, I think it's worthy to invest a little bit of a higher pick in it because you know what you're getting out of that. If I am drafting one later, it's under the assumption that I'm just going to be taking the L at tight end every week. I want more depth at running back or wide receiver, etc. But I really thought this was going to be a better year. I mean, like, you look at the tight ends that are out there. I don't know, like Dallas Goedert could have been earlier in the season, but I guess you're like quote unquote later round tight end was Rob Gronkowski. And I know you and I have been in a lot of smart leagues. He was not around in later rounds to draft Rob Gronkowski. So like it's been a really brutal year for that. We just have not seen somebody emerge like we've talked about with the Darren Wallers or George Kittles or Mark Andrews in previous years.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. I don't know what else more to add to that. I think you're spot on with that. And, you know, I've fallen into that trap of drafting the later tight ends. Like I said, I fortunately have hit a couple times, but I've missed more than I've hit over the years. And you're right. Gronk didn't last. And then there was that wonderful comment where Gronk said, I'm only going to be a blocking tight end.
Right. And I just went off, right?
Yeah. And he was dropped in a lot of leagues after that because he hadn't produced like in three or maybe even it was four games. I'm not sure how many at that point. But when he said, I've been brought here to be a blocking tight end, well, that confirmed it. And he was dropped in so many leagues. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I took him in the number one SiriusXM host league. I know I say the number one league just to irritate you because you also did the SiriusXM host league, one of three, I think, that were on the station this year. And I had Gronk, and I was like, you know what? This is fine. He's going to be a great number two tight end behind George Kittle. It'll be great. And Kittle got hurt a little bit earlier in the season, so I'm like, all right, fine. I'll use Gronk. And to your point, he had two catches, zero catches. He had one six-catch game against the Broncos and then one catch against the Chargers, and that was the blocking tight end comment. Since then, I think it's like 25, 30 catches or something to that extent, 17 catches over the 5 through 8 week stretch for 233 yards and three touchdowns. He has been a fantasy tight end starter and probably one of the more reliable ones other than the blowout week 9 game against the Saints where that one just got out of hand really, really, really fast. I mean, he had another touchdown again this past week against the Panthers. It's frustrating. I'm only just venting because I had Gronk and dropped him. I was one of many people who fell into the blocking trap. Let's move on to a bit more news that occurred today. This stuff was sort of expected. Andy Dalton was activated off the COVID-19 list. I am kind of curious about him as a fantasy starter in deeper leagues or two QB leagues if he was for some reason dropped. I mean, going against the Vikings defense this week, I know they looked good against the Bears on Monday night, but I think I could look good against the Bears with how bad their offense has been, and certainly Nick Foles being injured very late in that game helped matters. Mike McCarthy has always been pretty good. Like, if I'm going to give a compliment to the former Packers head coach, he's always been pretty good off of bye weeks. He has an 8-5 record, and he's going against the Vikings, who, if he's going to know any team intimately well, it's them. Like, I think I'm kind of interested in Andy Dalton as like a QB20 or QB15 in that range this week. Am I crazy, though?
No, you are not crazy at all. When Andy Dalton took over, the first thing I said was that when there are games when Dallas is going to face heavy pressure, he's in trouble and not much will get done because that line can't protect him. But there will be games on the schedule when he's going to have a little bit of time to throw. And with those weapons, Andy Dalton can still play quarterback. It's just he needs to have some help around him. Well, Minnesota, they blitzed the Bears anytime the Bears were in an obvious passing situation, but the Bears couldn't do anything about it. With all the weapons in Dallas, you can't do that. You can't go zero blitz. It's not even possible to do because they could hand it off or screen it to Zeke. They've got the receivers. So basically, he is not going to see a pass rush. Minnesota has among the worst corners in the league. Andy Dalton has a great chance to put up 300 yards and two or three touchdowns this week.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jeff has Winston ranked number 15. Of course, we're going to talk about Breeze and Winston in just a little second. So Winston ranked 15, Dalton ranked 16, Cousins ranked 17. And again, Cousins facing the flip side of this, the Cowboys defense, which has also been pretty bad. I'm a little bit intrigued by all three of those guys. And like Alex Smith at 14, I would take all three of them over Alex Smith. Cam Newton at 12 against the Texans, that's a little bit interesting. I think I'd have Newton higher, but like Tua against the Broncos defense, I know the Broncos defense isn't as great, but I think I'd rather have Dalton, Winston, and Cousins over Tua as well. For just an example, if you're kind of trying to stream the quarterback position, especially if you have a Josh Allen or Drew Brees out.
Yes. So to our point, Dalton is a great streamer this week. he is squarely in play as a DFS opportunity. Sure. His salary is super cheap, and I really see tremendous upside here. And I don't see – I mean, other than the Andy Dalton implosion game, and we've seen plenty of those in his career, but with these weapons, I think they're going to be fully ready, and they are going to do very well this week.
All right, Drew Brees, we've talked about it on Tuesday when I was here with Jake, and then I know the guys on Monday, listen, Jeff, also talked about Brees' injury. I don't want to like spend too much time on it, but we know he's going to be out at least 2 weeks now. I just want to hear from you and your perspective, because I haven't really got a chance to talk to you about it. What do you think of Jameis Winston's fantasy prospects for the foreseeable future as the starter, and how do you feel about guys like Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders? We know what Alvin Kamara is going to do, but I'm curious on your thoughts on Thomas and Sanders.
I am not excited at all about Jameis Winston. The whole point of the Saints offense is they get the ball out quickly. And that could be because Drew Brees has been their quarterback, but regardless, this is a quick moving offense. Well, Jameis Winston has that long delivery and windup. This is not conducive for the offense they run. I fully expect, my opinion here, that there will be a lot of Taysom Hill. There will be some Jameis Winston when they need him to be out there, but we're going to see a ton of Taysom Hill. And I think that Winston has very, very little upside here. Michael Thomas has, well, he's played three games. He has 95, I think 10 catches for 95 yards in three games. Michael Thomas is either not well from that ankle or there is something going on. I just don't think Winston at this point can run their offense. I think that they brought him in to groom him and teach him and prepare him so when Brees is gone, he could be ready. But we saw him when he knew the offense and all the problems he had. Now, fortunately, they had to throw the ball 50 times a game, and he put up top three fantasy numbers, and I had him on my teams and I loved him. That's not the case here.
Yeah, I mean, like, so the Taysom Hill thing is a different factor. We talked about it on Tuesday that I thought you got to check how Taysom Hill is qualified in your fantasy leagues. If he is a tight end or if he is a running back or wide receiver, like, I don't know what you're doing. I've seen a few leagues where he is tight end. I'm picking him up because I agree with you. I think Taysom Hill is going to get more involved. And even if he passes once or twice, he's still going to get three or four carries. Maybe he gets a catch or two. Like, that just adds up overall what I anticipate more Taysom Hill usage is going to look like. There's a decent amount if he's a fantasy tight end. If he's a quarterback, that's a different matter altogether. I'm not going that direction. I think right. I disagree, though, on Jameis Winston's fantasy prospects compared to you. Yes, I understand the Saints offense gets the ball out fast, and he's not going to have that innate chemistry that Drew Brees has with Michael Thomas. So I actually think Thomas is like a little bit lower on my list until I see it from the Winston-Thomas connection. But there's going to have to be passing involved. It's just not a run-first or run-oriented team. Now, they don't do this, I need to run the ball to set up the pass thing. That's not what the Saints do, which is why they are a good offense. They just run the ball when it works in their favor, things like that. They're always very good at manipulating the defenses to get into the situations. But I think you can have a deal where Winston is going to be an effective fantasy quarterback if he is only throwing 35 to 30 times. And my thoughts are he's been in the offense for 10 weeks. Like, if you are an NFL quarterback and can't learn an offense by 10 weeks, why are you in a grooming situation anyway, right? Like, this is – you are number one overall pick. You have played in the NFL a number of years. You're learning behind one of the best offensive minds, the head coach and Sean Payton, and certainly one of the best offensive minds at the quarterback position ever in Drew Brees. There has to be something that you pick up along the way.
Well, certainly he's learned the offense, but let's face it. Sean Payton played him twice a year, every year of his career in Tampa. He saw the five interception games firsthand. He knows that Jameis Winston can ruin your chance to win if you let him throw the ball. He knows this. Sean Payton is 100% clear on this. So his defense has finally stepped up after not showing up the first 7 weeks of the season. They have come out blazing the last 2 weeks. This is now – they're playing like the championship caliber defense that we thought they'd be in the beginning of the season. This team is going to win with a conservative offensive attack and with their defense pinning their ears back and causing havoc all over the field the way they were supposed to. I'm going to guarantee you that unless they fall behind significantly on the scoreboard, Jameis Winston is not throwing a lot of passes in this game.
Like, what's the number? How many attempts do you
25.
Think?
25 attempts. That's it. You are not seeing him. Unless this game they fall way behind, Sean Payton is not going to let Jameis Winston lose a game for him in a year. They need every win that they can get.
I mean, you're right. Sean Payton has seen Winston twice a year now for his entire career as being in the NFC South Division. But if Sean Payton thought Winston was that bad, would they have really signed him? I mean, like, that like it goes both ways. He signed him for a reason. Maybe it's because he just didn't want somebody else to have him. The compensatory pick factor, I think, is really smart, and the Saints have been super progressive in terms of doing that type of thing with their players. Teddy Bridgewater was a great example of that last year. But like they signed Winston for this reason. He's seen what he can do. It's not like he's going to be afraid to have him throw the ball, I don't feel like.
I don't think they signed him for this year. I think that Peyton thought over the course of time he could teach him to be a better decision maker. That doesn't get changed in 10 weeks. That's going to take a while. And when Breeze is gone, it's an option that Peyton will have if he doesn't have another option. But the more he can put him under his tutelage and try to teach him and put him in good situations. Part of the decision making is going to be to give him a quick identified read and not make him go to the second. But we've seen him screw up on the first read in Tampa. But that said, I'm telling you, I really believe that Sean Payton's plan was not this year. It was to hopefully get something out of him in the future if he could break him of the bad habits.
He attempted 10 passes against the Niners this past week in what, basically like a half. So, I mean, that if you extrapolate that out, that's about 20 to 25 based off of what you're saying with the attempts. I think, I don't know, I don't see a scenario where the Falcons are aggressively blowing up the Saints. So there shouldn't be a point where Winston is attempting that many passes. But just how susceptible that defense has been, the Falcons, to a good offense, which I think the Saints can be even with Winston, I still feel like there's an opportunity for him to even be a fantasy successful quarterback this week if he is only attempting 25 to 30 passes at minimum, and it's possible. I don't know who's catching them, which is kind of the problem. Like, you would assume it'd be Michael Thomas, but maybe not. You'd assume if I think Winston's going to be a success, then Emmanuel Sanders could too, but I'm not like super eager to start him either. I do want to wait and see when it comes to those pass catchers if I can, especially Sanders. I don't think you have the option if you draft a Michael Thomas to bench him. But I think I would be okay streaming Winston if I had to. I just would certainly look at a few of the other options that we had already discussed, at least.
No, it makes sense. I'm looking forward. I'm anxious to see what will happen on Sunday. But no, I fair point. Definitely like what you said. And let's see how it shakes out on Sunday with these receivers. But I think Sanders is going to be a potential sneaky one, because if there's one thing Winston can do, if they do dial up a deep play, Sanders is probably the sneaky player to get open in the middle of the field. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Sanders would benefit from that more than Michael Thomas, certainly. So, all right, I talked about the top of the hour or top of the show that we're going to get into a bit more of how to plan ahead for the playoffs, how to target players, or how to be active in trades. I know this is kind of like the main topic for a lot of different fantasy sites out there right now, and I'm excited to kind of break it down with you. Before we do that, though, I want to get a word from our sponsors, BetMGM. Football is in full swing, and new customers at BetMGM Sports can keep the season rolling with a 100% deposit match up to $500. Simply sign up and make a deposit with bonus code ROTOWIRE to take advantage of this offer. There's never been a better time to get in the action at BetMGM with parlay bonus payouts, live betting, daily boosted odds specials, and a whole lot more. Don't let 1 minute of the NFL season pass you by. Download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com and use bonus code or promo code ROTOWIRE to double your betting bankroll with a 100% deposit match up to $500. You must be 21 years or older and physically located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia. Please make sure to gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia, or 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional code offer not available in Nevada. Okay, so we talked about trades, waivers, planning ahead for the fantasy playoffs. Just like a basic advice column here, Jim. Go ahead. You have the podcast floor. What's your thoughts on how to prepare for the playoffs? What's the strategies that you employ? What's some strategies you've seen from other fantasy managers that have been successful? Just give me your general thoughts first, and I'll kind of follow up later.
So at this point of the season, we're near the trade deadline. The die has pretty much been cast as to what type of team each fantasy manager has. You know, obviously, if your team's dominant, you know if your team is terrible, and you know if you're trying to fight for your playoff life. But regardless, fantasy managers have to be clear on where their team stands. Don't deceive yourself at this point. Now, once you make that decision, if your chances of making the playoffs are on life support, I strongly urge you to consider trading one of your high-end players to a contender to try to get back two strong starting players. It's possible, because sometimes the best teams in the league – have acquired a massive amount of depth, you may be able to trade a running back one. You may be able to get back a strong running back two and maybe a wide receiver one in return. Because if your team is on life support, that high-end player is not helping you right now, and you have to maximize wins. Having more players in your lineup who could put points on the board may give you a better chance to win. It's a move to try to make the playoffs. That's the first thing I'll say.
Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, I mean, I had to do this in a different league, and I was frustrated by it. I'm not really a huge fan of the league overall. I think it's far more luck-based than it is strategy. It's like 14 teams, massive rosters, sizes. And you're like doing a slow draft as things are going on. And the past 3 or 4 years, I drafted Zeke when he had his holdout situation. I had Melvin Gordon when he had his holdout situation. Like, it was annoying. So then I'd get like sniped on the next pick on guys that I could have been able to benefit from. But this year's frustration point for me, I had Gardner Minshew as kind of my starting. Well, I had Dak Prescott first. And of course, Dak is out. So I had Gardner Minshew as my backup. He then gets placed on IR, whatever you want to call it, for Jacksonville right now. Just tanking IR, I guess you can say. And then we have a situation where I'm like, all right, I need a quarterback. There literally is none available. I mean, it was like, go get Ryan Fitzpatrick was your top option. There was no quarterbacks available because this league is too deep. So I traded Nick Chubb, who had been on IR he would have 2 more weeks. So obviously he returned this past week. So it was 2 weeks ago. And I got Drew Brees and AJ Green. I am not a huge fan of Drew Brees from his fantasy quarterback position. Like I didn't think he'd be that good. And I really don't like AJ Green. I know a lot of listeners are well aware of my disdain for AJ Green, but that was like the best I could do because I was just so hands tied behind my back on this one. I don't know. Like I was at the time 3-5. You have a few more opportunities to maybe move up in the standings and have a chance. It was a bad move to get rid of Nick Chubb, but it was kind of the thing I had to do. What's your thoughts on if you are in that situation where you are just desperately clinging to any hope for the playoffs? The idea was right. I knew I was just facing a bunch of jerk managers that didn't want to actually pony up for what Nick Chubb's value is. But like, how do you manage that situation?
Well, in terms of the trade, I mean. You have to compete, and sometimes the assets you have are the only things that you're going to be able to use to improve your team. So it has to be considered. It's hard to do. Trading Nick Chubb is not an easy thing to do, but you needed a quarterback. And like I said, AJ Green wasn't a great opportunity to pick up, but regardless, you had to compete, and that was the situation you were in. So you have to assess your fantasy team again, for who it really is or what it really is. And like a general manager, at least you have the ability in season, unlike in, you know, the professional leagues, you could really reconstitute your team on the fly if you have to do that. But you have desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yeah, I agree. Like it's a tough thing. Like that league, I'm just done. I mean, I'm playing in 16 leagues right now, so I can kind of prioritize which ones are important and which ones are not to me. But that one, I really do subscribe to the theory, especially as a fantasy professional, that you are supposed to be doing the best you can to win every single week. When there is literally not a quarterback available in week 8 to go ahead and pick up, that's just a bonkers league that shouldn't really be a priority for me. So that's kind of how I'm at in that one. And I could have picked up Winston this week. I just didn't care about the waiver wire in time. So maybe that's on me and, you know, a shame on me thing. I shouldn't be doing that. But like for fantasy managers listening to this, if you still are close, I think the idea of trading your Nick Chubb or Austin Eckler, for example, who I know you are kind of interested in, we'll talk about a little bit later as well, for pieces that can help you win right now, that's the thing that has to matter, right? Like getting you to the next week. Every single week when you are in those 4-5, 5-4, 3-6 type of scenarios, or I guess now 4-6, right, or on week 10, that's kind of how you have to survive these situations.
Absolutely. And if you don't make the playoffs, you have no chance of winning anything, obviously. Right. It's a very obvious statement. So, right, you do what you can to give yourself a chance to make the dance.
Let's do the reverse of this. So you're feeling pretty good. I try to make a lot of moves in stake league. There are two different stake leagues, as you are aware, at the RotoWire office. One that's really primarily Madison-based. Everybody there is from Madison and like in the office, or if we were in the office for COVID-19 reasons, we'd all be able to talk and whatever else. And then there's the other one, the one that I'm in, that is like drastically harder. You have like Shanky and you have Chris Liss and Jeff Erickson and just all these smart people from all across the world, it feels like, that are in my one. And I'm somehow in that one too. So I'm trying to make moves on the Stake League to improve my team. And I just can't get anyone to bite. Like, I'm offering Terry McLaurin. I feel like my team is pretty good. I just need a serviceable running back, too. I have Derrick Henry, but my Wayne Gallman share, which has actually been okay given all the touchdowns, he's my running back, too, and I don't feel great about that. But I can't get any deal to move, and I still feel like my team is a pretty good deal, or like a pretty good situation. How do you angle that one? Like, how do you go ahead and assess that, say, hey, my team is looking pretty good. What's the best case scenario for I can improve my playoff chances?
So what I think is, yes, you're playoff bound and you know that's the case. I'm a big believer in shortening your bench. Now, this is the COVID year. So this is advice I use every year. And this year, it's much more dangerous because you never know when that bench is going to be needed. But we're getting close to the fantasy playoffs. And it's the opposite strategy I gave to the teams that are fighting for their playoff lives. But if you have a deep bench, you've acquired players in season, and you have good players sitting on your bench, you could package players together, send them to a team who is trying to fight for their playoff lives, and try to get one dynamic player from them. 2-for-1, 3-for-1, whatever you need to do to make the trade work. But it is a win-win situation because your team gets a greater starting lineup. The other team gets a chance to compete for the playoffs because they have multiple lineup spots that are better than they were. And so that is what I believe in, shortening that bench. Now that the bye weeks are close to over, that's when you start attacking and reconfiguring your roster that way.
I get that, and it makes complete sense to me. If I am the, let's say we're in a 12-team league, and I'm the 11 other managers that are seeing somebody trade, like, I don't know, Justin Jackson, Carson Wentz, Michael Gallup, and Noah Fant for Lamar Jackson and Tyreek Hill, that frustrates me, though. Because like I understand you are improving your four spots, but you're giving away two of the top five, top 10 fantasy players altogether. So like if you are the one using the here's all my four kind of junky guys that I wouldn't normally be playing for two of your stars approach, great. Like it's obviously works out. But from the 11 other managers' perspective, it's a frustrating endeavor, right?
Yes. And sometimes, well, maybe they should be involved in trading a little more actively as well. And that's sometimes true. It's frustration that, well, they missed out. It was somebody else and it wasn't them. But win-win deals are out there. And yes, it frustrates other people because they're not part of that win process.
Are you part of the no vetoes ever like group of people?
Yes, I prefer it that way. Yes. And if there was a case where somebody did something egregious, then I would not want that person in the league the following year.
Okay.
But otherwise, people, if you're in good standing in a league, you should be able to manage a team how you'd like.
Yeah, I like there are certain situations where it obviously looks like collusion, and those that they're like that's the reason the veto should be in play, but it should not be a strategic decision like, oh, you missed out on getting Lamar Jackson and Tyreek Hill, therefore I'm going to, you know, downvote it. That's not I don't believe that's how the veto system should work. So almost every scenario, yes, go ahead and do the trades, only if there's very obvious collusion that's going on. And I've actually seen it a lot on Twitter where people are like, should this trade be vetoed? And almost every time I'm like, no, it shouldn't. Like, you're just either being selfish or upset, like jealous about it, or you're just not thinking it through from the other team's perspective and you only see the big names. Very, very rarely do I think there's actually a situation where you should be declining a trade or vetoing a trade.
Yeah, 100% agree on that. And like you said, sour grapes most of the time, I think, is what it comes down to. Somebody else's fear of missing out, it wasn't them.
Okay, so the strategies are pretty simple, right? Like if you are somebody that's trying to cling on to playoff hopes, obviously you are going to be comfortable, or you have to be comfortable moving the Nick Chubbs of the world to try to get pieces that will help you. Like you said, you cannot win your fantasy championships unless you make the fantasy playoffs. So you got to make sure you're able to get into that spot to do so. But if you're on the flip side of things, you can try to prepare a little bit more, use some of your depth on your bench or whatever else to get some of these star players that could guarantee or at least up your chances to go ahead and win. Let's talk about the players specifically, because I think that's where fantasy managers can be most interested in hearing. Like, is there certain players that you are most like you are more comfortable trying to target right now as we are really entering the stretch run for the fantasy playoffs?
Yes, and typically these are players with depressed value who I could make a case that they could see improvement going forward, and you could get them at a very fair value. I believe that Zeke Elliott's a buy because Dallas was a train wreck before the bye, but their interior line has gotten healthier. They're not getting the tackles back. They were on injured reserve. They're gone. But that opportunity with the interior line that was in real shambles, all three of them are back. And Dallas has passing weapons. Their defense, their schedule before week 15 is favorable. Now, I don't like the week 15 and 16 matchups, but if Zeke Elliott's rolling, he could catch the ball too. Anyway, I'm not going to talk forever about Zeke, but it's players like that who right now have little perceived value.
Okay. I want some specific. I'm fine. Let's talk about Zeke because I think he's going to be a very interesting name. He's obviously been one of the few top 10 picks that have been healthy and played for most of the season. He's been hurt by a bad offensive line and a quarterback that got injured pretty early on. The defense has been so bad. And once Dak went out, Zeke has been really, really ineffective. But I think he's a guy that if I have, and I do have him a few leagues, I'm holding on to him, and I would be certainly fine acquiring him. The problem is you might not find a fantasy manager that wants to trade him because either their team has struggled to the point where they've just checked out, or they also have identified, hey, I think he's going to be one of the better guys towards the end of the year that I can rely on. Like how aggressive would you be going out and getting Ezekiel Elliott?
Well, you at least make an offer. You know, speaking generically to fantasy managers, you look at your roster, you see what you can offer that would be perceived at least as similar value to the person who's currently rostering Zeke Elliott, and you just make a move there. And if they're not interested, that's fine, move on. But I don't know, in the eyes of a fantasy manager who currently has Elliott, they're going to be frustrated right now. They probably aren't making the case for him to blow up or do very well down the stretch because they've been mired for 4 weeks now with lack of production. So you get somebody on tilt, and that's where you got to take advantage of this. You know, Dallas' schedule, Minnesota, I think it's a very good matchup. In Washington, not the best matchup, but they're better as a pass rush unit. You know, they can be handled there. And Baltimore, if that injury, oh man, Brandon Williams, their great defensive tackle, got injured. If Brandon Williams is down for significant time, the Ravens go from being a top defense to a bottom defense against the run because he has, for years, he's been like the engine to that run defense. And so it's not a bad schedule, and Zeke's going to get opportunity. So, and again, they have receivers. And so teams, if they don't have a great pass rush, the Washington game may be a bad one, but if they can't completely like blitz all day on Dalton, then Zeke's going to have room to run.
Another name that you have written down here as I'm looking at our rundown, Austin Eckler. And I actually agree with you completely. Now, this is a different situation. If you are a fantasy manager that has Austin Eckler on your roster, more likely than not, you have just been trying to bide your time, get to that point where Eckler comes back and you can have some fantasy value. There are going to be a few situations where you run into a Joe Bartle who has Nick Chubb that has to deal him for a quarterback and a really crappy wide receiver like AJ Green. But I think Austin Eckler is somebody that I'd be very aggressive trying to get. And you've seen how much the Chargers offense has really missed Austin Eckler with how they've struggled. And I know that they've produced number-wise, but obviously the wins haven't been there. You watch those Charger games, and I think there's a very obvious element that's missing, and it is Austin Eckler. His schedule looks pretty good the rest of the season, too, assuming he comes back in week 12, as it at least seems like it's projected to right now.
Yes, and you know, if you're in a position where you're going to make the playoffs, you don't need him in full swing till week 14, roughly. Right. So that's actually a great thing. And what I liked was I was very, very concerned this preseason, and I avoided Eckler because Tyrod Taylor was the starter and expected to be the starter. And I'm like, well, he's not going to target his running backs. And he saw one target in the opener. And then, but then all of a sudden, in his last full game he played with the youngster Herbert under center, 11 catches for 84 yards.
Yeah. I mean, he's gonna get involved in the passing game, and we've seen Kalen Ballage have some sort of career resurgence right now with the Chargers. I think he's surpassed Joshua Kelly in that capacity. But Austin Eckler is going to do the pass catching stuff and also still run the ball when he's healthy. I don't think the Chargers bring him back unless they feel completely confident in his health. It's kind of the same situation with Christian McCaffrey. I know McCaffrey got hurt afterwards, but it was a different injury altogether. Where the Chargers are right now in the standings, there's no reason to have Austin Eckler come back unless you feel 100% confident in his health and what he can do for you rest of the season. Is there any other players that you feel confident targeting? Otherwise, I have a few names that I actually would target and also trade. Like I have both.
Yeah, I'll just make quick points on these. I do think Amari Cooper is in for a bit of a bounce back. I do think Dallas's offense is going to settle down a little bit, and Cooper will see quite a few targets. Again, he's not going to be the superstar wide receiver one you hoped, but you could get him to be maybe a mid-range wide receiver two, because he's perceived as a flex right now. And I think Travis Fulgham is a good buy because he comes off a game where he was not targeted heavily. A lot of people are going to think, well, now they got all their weapons back, and Fulgham is going to fall back into obscurity. I don't believe that. Fulgham is like a true X receiver, and he had James Bradbury on him, and I think that was a big factor as to why he didn't have much of a game. But I think he's a player. He is going to see targets, and he's going to see a little easier of coverage at all the other players. And then last two, I think Jarvis Landry is a great player to acquire. His targets have gone up, especially a couple weeks ago, but the production hadn't, because the last two Cleveland games were played in horrible winds, and therefore there was no passing attack. But Landry is going to see those targets. Even if they don't throw a ton, he may see 10 targets a game the rest of the way. And he's a player. He's getting healthier from the hip injury, especially that bye week they recently had. And I also like taking a look at Mark Andrews, has been really boom or really bust. But the injury to Nick Boyle immediately hit, the snap share for Andrews shot up. And if that snap share is up, that means the potential for targets is. He had 76% of the snaps in the game last week when Boyle was out and saw 9 targets, which was better than anything he had seen in the last 4 weeks.
Okay. All right. That's some good names. Can I give you a few of mine?
Please. Please.
All right, so we talked about last time we were on air together, it was on SiriusXM. That was the day that Aaron Jones missed Friday's practice, then was held out for multiple weeks. We also had late, or I guess it was early, Joe Mixon was injured, and we were actually talking about, hey, Mixon's probably going to miss through the bye week. I wasn't anticipating a game after the bye week, but I'm definitely going out and getting Mixon because his strength of schedule, rest of the season, the running back position actually looks pretty good. And if you are interested, I should have done this a little bit earlier. RotoWire actually has a really great strength of season schedule tool that was just added midway through the year. It's on the RotoWire portal, right next to the stats section in between defensive first position as well. And it breaks down by position, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, kicker, all different like players, different graphs. If you click on them, it's a really expansive thing, and I love it. It's one of the best things that we've added on the site. You can get that at rotowire.com/pod for a 10-day free trial, so you can try out that the strength of schedule thing, that tool that I'm talking about. It's really going to be helpful for me. So a lot of this is based off of that, but like we talked about Joe Mixon. I think I still am in on Joe Mixon. I'm going to give you a name that I imagine a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, no, duh, of course, Joe. A.J. Brown. I mean, I was completely in on A.J. Brown. He was one of the most rostered players of the top four rounds that I had in my league. I was looking across. Again, I did 16 drafts. I keep track of everyone that I was drafted around the time. A.J. Brown and Justin Jefferson were my two highest rostered wide receivers. Obviously, there's a different price tag that you paid for A.J. Brown than Justin Jefferson. I think you're going to be able to get some frustrated fantasy managers after this week. But even in week 12, too. So, again, he had one catch for 21 yards against the Colts last Thursday night. He plays the Ravens this week. We know how great the Ravens defense is. And then he plays the Colts again. You're going to have a three-week stretch where Brown is probably going to be at least the lowest numbers that we've seen throughout the entire season. But week 13 and on, he is the Browns, the Jaguars, the Lions, the Packers, the Texans. If he is not a top three fantasy wide receiver during that final five-game stretch, I'm going to be stunned. I will pay whatever it takes to go ahead and get A.J. Brown, assuming that the fantasy manager who has him in week 11 and 12 gets frustrated with how he performs against the Ravens and Colts.
Yes, I personally would be surprised if somebody did deal him, but you're right. If he does have a poor game, then it could cause a little bit of short-term panic, and I think you're smart by trying to act on that. But I think if somebody drafted Brown – and they were passionate about that draft pick because they probably reached up to get him, as I would have been somebody in a couple of my leagues who did, knowing that he had scored in 5 straight games. He had at least 82 yards in 3 of his last 6 games. I just know that crazy upside. But you don't lie. If he has one more bad game, that could be enough to put somebody on tilt. And why not aggressively make a move at that point?
Well, here's like I'm going to double down on this. I will give you – Michael Thomas, and pieces for AJ Brown. I will give you Adam Thielen or DK Metcalf and pieces for AJ Brown. That's how confident I feel about AJ Brown. So I'm not saying, hey, like you're going to be able to squeeze one by a fantasy manager. I'm saying I'm going to go do whatever it takes to get him for the stretch run because I think he's going to be a major difference maker. Another guy I like quite a bit, and you might be able to get off a down week this week, James Robinson. I mean, nobody thought James Robinson would be this good except maybe Mario Puig, who is talking about it constantly on Twitter. He had articles written about him. I don't think he anticipated this extent, but we've seen James Robinson be one of the very true three-down workhorses in the NFL. He's going to have the Steelers this week, and you have to imagine the production's limited. But I think in a full-point PPR setting, I'm going to pay a similar A.J. Brown-esque price tag, whatever you want to do that for James Robinson as well, because he has the Browns in Week 12, which is decent enough, but the Vikings Week 13, Titans Week 14, it gets a little bit tricky Week 15 and 16 against the Ravens, Bears, and then he ends up with the Colts. So it's not a great schedule, but you're talking about a guy that's going to get you to the playoffs. I think James Robinson easily can have that capability.
Absolutely. Now, it was funny because last week I had told people to be a little cautious with Robinson because 2 weeks prior, Chris Thompson was back in action. He had four targets and Robinson only had two. But then, surprising, surprise, surprise, Thompson got hurt and went back on the IR. And so that really solidifies Robinson's role in the receiving game. But Thompson, as soon as he came back in, was immediately four targets. But like I said, he's gone for a while now. So yes, absolute green light on Robinson. I wish he'd be a little more like last week. He did see five targets with Thompson out, so he's back to that usage. That's huge.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Obviously, I think the switch from Minshew to Luton is going to be a downgrade for Robinson overall, but just how the Jaguars have been using him, it's hard for me to fade. There's one name that I actually think you could sell high on right now, and it's Josh Jacobs, who just came off 112 yards, two touchdowns, got involved in the passing game as well. He has the Chiefs again this week. I think that's going to be a pretty solid matchup for him as well, but you look at the strength of schedule, like the Falcons week 12, you wouldn't imagine that's going to be a tough one. Well, it's just because the Falcons are so bad against opposing quarterbacks that you can pass all day. It doesn't matter. Then he has the Jets week 13. That's fine enough. But Colts week 14, I actually think the Chargers week 15 could be a problem. The Broncos defense in week 17, fine. If you're playing your fantasy playoffs, you know, you shouldn't be doing that in week 17 anyway. But the Dolphins in week 16, I think they're trending upwards as well. I think you can sell really high in Josh Jacobs. And for example, I would flip straight up Jacobs for James Robinson right now. I'm a little bit disappointed how Jacobs has just completely fallen off as a pass-catching target for the team. So in standard scoring, maybe I'm less interested in moving him. But certainly in full-point PPR, I'm a little bit worried about Jacobs. And I'm actually been investing a little bit in Devontae Booker if I have a roster spot available. Just in the off chance that Jacobs were to get injured, you have Booker who could slide right in and basically do, the Rams running back from last year who became a fantasy darling when there was a bunch of injuries. Who is that? I'm blanking on him right now.
I don't know why I'm blanking as well. Sorry.
Okay. It was a Panthers guy. Anyway, I think Josh Jacobs is a guy that I would actually be comfortable moving right now just because he's not getting involved in the passing game as much as I thought he was and really was doing earlier in the year.
You met C.J. Anderson a couple of years ago.
Thank you. C.J. Anderson for a couple. Yes, that's exactly it. C.J. Anderson.
Yes. So I agree with you on the Jacobs call because at this point, Jacobs hasn't done very well. He has, but he's had 200-yard games in the last three, and he scored in the last two. So he has some higher value right now, and I think that's your opportunity to sell because he seems hot in terms of fantasy manager's perception. So, yes, it's a good time to sell. He hasn't been a great runner.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Real quick, there's a bit of strategy that I think can be played as well with defense and kickers. And again, when we're talking about trying to plan for the fantasy playoffs and what to do to get to that point, I think being proactive on acquiring kickers who are have good matchups. Jerry Donabedian does a great job talking about kickers on Twitter all the time, like who to pick up. He's been very high in like the implied totals and what that means. Just exchanging 4 or 5 points each and every week can make a big difference. But I think the defense is also critical too. And I don't mind even keeping two kickers or two defenses on my roster if it means I'm preparing for the fantasy playoffs. How do you handle those situations with the kickers and defense and what they can do as we get kind of closer to go time?
So with kickers, if I've had a somewhat reliable kicker all year, then there's obviously no need to act. But if, like many of us, you've had, you know, the kicking merry-go-round where things haven't worked out and you've had to go back and forth, maybe look on the waiver wire and try to target a player from either warm weather venue or from a dome team, and then check their schedule and make sure they have at least, you know, two of their games in the fantasy playoffs in those environments, and prepare yourself for the fantasy playoffs. You don't always want maybe a kicker from Buffalo during December. If they have two home games, that could be problematic. There may not be many field goals. So that's just a little tip to get you a couple points potentially. And with defenses, I like what you said. If you could carry two defenses, but you really want to stream a week ahead of time. So have this week's starter, and then when we get to the fantasy playoffs, try to pick up next week's starter and look at those matchups before somebody else plays a stream game. So if you have the roster space to do that, that's a very good use of pre-streaming your choices.
Yeah, I'll even be more aggressive, especially if I know my team is looking pretty good and I have maybe one or two roster spots. I'm not so much interested in doing the streaming kicker. Like, I get it, but week to week, I can kind of get by with that. There's enough options on the waiver wire. But I think this year, and even last year too, we were seeing it quite a bit. There's a lot of smart players that you're playing against that are aggressive and doing the same type of thing you are. And they're looking ahead at not just this week, but next week as well. I think the natural progression is to, if you feel comfortable saying, I'm going to make the playoffs, you should be targeting defenses that in week 13 or week 14 have great matchups. Now, I don't know off the top of my head who the Jets are playing, for example, but we all know we're picking up the Chargers defense last week for the event that they're going to be playing the Jets this week. Why can't we take it one step further and pick up whoever's playing the Jets week 13 and 14 with the same premise? Like, I'm fine suggesting and acknowledging that if you feel like you have a roster spot available that you don't need, like if you have to drop a defense in week 11 or 12 due to injury, whatever, fine. But like you are getting a potential and almost guaranteed top 10 performer at that position, even if you are just thinking a few weeks ahead in advance.
Yeah, it's very hard to dispute that. I completely agree with that. It's just being smart with your team and planning for the near future. And when we get to those fantasy playoffs, the near future is all that matters. You have to expect you're going to win that next game and be prepared when the schedule comes up and says, hey, I have another playoff game. Yes, I have my roster ready for it.
All right. Well, Jim, give us what you are working on right now. I know that Jeff always does that. I want to make sure we get an opportunity. Like, you got a lot of different videos going out every week. I know I've been watching that on Twitter.
Yes, thank you. So for every Tuesday on the SiriusXM app, I drop two short videos. It's a short waiver wire top free agent by position. And then I drop one with a deeper dive where there's three players that are non-obvious waiver pickups. Drop that one. I am on the Sirius show on Friday and Saturday, RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today, 11 a.m. Eastern on Friday. And then
noon Eastern, right? Noon Eastern on Saturday.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, those, my time zones always kill me. And then an hour later on Saturday. And then I also do at my Twitter, at Jim Coventry NFL, and also on the RotoWire YouTube page, every Sunday morning, 75 minutes before the early games kick off, I do a live stream and I take your questions and answers. And I don't just give you who to start. I give you a why behind those particular players.
I love it. I love it. We're going to have to get you on Twitch too. I mean, that's the natural progression of this. You're right. Like, the RotoWire YouTube has been booming lately. We've really been pushing that as well. The natural progression is just to have you on Twitch. You're going to be a streamer for us. It's going to be perfect.
I love it. Well, actually, I just found out about a streaming service called Restream.
Okay.
And you could do one broadcast to multiple platforms at the same time without OBS. And I'm pretty slow in terms of technology, so I'm going to be using this. And I think Twitch is one of those. So I may hit you up to make sure I know any ins and outs, but I'm probably going to start streaming the multi-platforms.
I like it. I like it. We're really progressing here. When we have you doing multiple streams on Sunday afternoon, that's how you know we've gotten big time. We got Jim just being your streamer du jour right here. It's perfect. It's perfect. I love it.
At 55 years old, that'd be the big shock, David. You weren't seeing that coming.
Yeah, that was like the plus 1,000 bet for RotoWire this year, is to have Jim Coventry be your top streamer of the year. I like it a lot. Well, thank you for coming on to the podcast this Wednesday. Of course, John and Mario are going to break down every NFL game for you like they do every Thursday. And then we have Laird and Jenstead with that DFS content I talked about earlier on Fridays. They do a great job. Certainly stick around to get a chance to listen to each of those podcasts. And thank you for listening to today's show.